Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Welcome, welcome to the show. Critical concept today. Title of show: high insulin versus high blood sugar. The critical difference you must understand. Yes, the nation's number one epidemic, diabetes, high blood sugar. I can't believe it. I was going to do this show a year ago and somehow it got lost. Bottom line, we're looking at the wrong disease. I can't believe this. I can't believe how bad we botch things. Again, the title of the show: high insulin versus high blood sugar, the critical difference between the two. We're looking at the wrong disease. Long before you suffer from symptoms, diseases started by diabetes, we could have been alerting you to it years before by measuring your insulin levels. No one does this. I can't believe that no one does this, but no one does this. We do it after you have diabetes. How can we do these things? I don't get it. I just don't get it. This one we should have down. You've got to understand it, of course. Thus, we're going to go to the pictures in a moment. But once again, it's right there in front of our nose, and we botch it. So, if you get nothing from this show, if you're already tuned out, remember I said one thing. The next time you go to get your physical exam, have them do a 2-hour glucose tolerance test. The glucose tolerance test. Forget fasting blood sugar. That we even look at that is, I don't have words for that. Even glycosylated hemoglobin, forget it. The standard test that has to be done every single 6 months or every year is a 2-hour glucose tolerance test, and they must measure the insulin every single hour. That is where you find the truth about how you're metabolizing sugars and, more importantly, what your insulin levels are. And we're going to get into this in detail today. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. If you can, get to a computer. You must get to the computer to really enjoy and appreciate the show. Let's get to the pictures. Number one, picture number one. There it is. Take a look at this. High blood sugar, hyperglycemia. That's what everybody's concern is. What's your blood sugar? We give people kits to measure their blood sugar. We measure fasting blood glucose because if your blood sugar is consistently too high, you're going to get these little signals. You're going to feel thirsty. Your mouth's going to be dry. You're going to be urinating more often, especially getting up at night to urinate. You're going to feel lethargic. Your muscles are going to ache. Your vision's going to blur. You're going to, well, they put get infections. Here's reality. You don't heal quickly. Your wound healing is decreased. The list goes on and on and on and on. Now, we could start there, but that's not where we should start. What we should be doing is measuring the insulin. Let's get the science down so you can understand a little bit about blood sugar regulation, about what normal physiology is, and then you can really appreciate how bad we've botched this up. So let's start with a sugar molecule. That's right. Sugar in what? Sugar in everything. Every carbohydrate you eat, every glass of soda or juice you drink, every piece of candy or potato or yam that you eat will break down ultimately into glucose. We need glucose. Glucose, good. Glucose, vital for health. If glucose is too low, the body in the liver converts amino acids, protein. The steak you ate makes sugar. The steak you ate makes sugar. How's that? The fats you eat make sugar. The liver, the body, has lots of conversion mechanisms such that if your sugar gets too low, if sugar's not around, if sugar's gone from the world, your body's still going to make sugar. So we need sugar. And sugar, meaning glucose, goes into your cell. We're looking at picture number two. Sugar, as glucose, goes into the cell and goes into a process called glycolysis. Now, picture two there, that's the 10 steps involved in glycolysis. And we don't need, of course, to get into those steps. But somewhere, I believe in the cytoplasm, if I remember correctly, is this conversion from that sugar molecule to pyruvate. So look at the top. It says glucose. This is picture two. And look at the bottom, PYR. It says pyruvate. Now that pyruvate, now go to picture number three. That pyruvate then is converted into acetyl-CoA. So the sugar becomes acetyl-CoA. Then the acetyl-CoA goes into the Krebs cycle or the citric acid cycle. Some of you are getting headaches. I respect that. Some of you are remembering when you failed out of chemistry. Some of you are getting excited because you remember this. This is exciting to geeks like me. The Krebs cycle, the citric acid cycle. That sugar that you eat, that piece of steak you ate that got converted to glucose because you needed glucose, because you didn't eat enough glucose or sugar. So the steak was made into sugar in your liver, eventually gets converted to pyruvate in the cell, and that pyruvate gets converted to acetyl-CoA, and that acetyl-CoA goes into the Krebs cycle and pumps out, okay, something called nicotine adenine dinucleotide, NADH, okay? So sugar becomes NADH. Just bear with it. You can do it. It's important. Now go to picture number four. Picture number four, you see there on the bottom left, NADH, and then there's an arrow towards NAD. That NADH, that molecule, donates hydrogens, protons, into this thing called the electron transport chain. And it builds a voltage potential as it keeps transferring electrons across these different units. Blah, blah, all those H positives up top begin to create a voltage difference. In other words, you're building pressure across a gradient. Blah, blah. Bottom line, somebody lights a fuse and out pops ATP. Now, ATP is something you've heard about. So I gave you the brief version, the cliff notes. Those of you who like the cliff notes, you just got the cliff notes. Whether it is a fat, a steak, a protein, or a glass of juice, that glucose molecule is going to go into the cell because the cell needs it because it's going to produce ATP, and that's the currency of the cell. The energy of the cell is built on glucose. That's super important to understand. Glucose, good. But how it's regulated, well, that's what the show is about. All right, you're liking this. You're liking a little chemistry. I know you are. It's important or you're never going to know what you're doing. And this is the thing. So I'm going to detour here in that classic way that I like to detour occasionally. People always say they know and they don't know. It doesn't matter how educated they are. They skip this part of it and they act like they know and they never know, because when the rubber hits the road and they really have to rely upon understanding to create compliance, this is where they check out. And the reason is they don't know. For years, I sit across the desk talking to people and they nod their heads and they don't know. That's what everybody does. Next time you talk to your doctor and you're nodding your head, like that dog, right, in the back of the car, that thing that's on that swivel where it just nods its head, stop your doctor and say, you know, I don't understand a word you said. Do that with your lawyer. Do that with your accountant. Do that with everybody. We'll have a better world. Do it with me, please, on this show. Understand that glucose becomes adenosine triphosphate. It goes through glycolysis. It goes through the Krebs cycle. It goes through the electron transport chain. Ultimately, we call that electron transport chain oxidative phosphorylation. We put a phosphate on a diphosphate. We add phosphates, which are high energy compounds. All right, enough. I am merciful. Enough of that. But you understand glucose is important now. Okay. Now, here's the point. Once that glucose is in the blood, the level of it has to be regulated. And we have not evolved to regulate it eating the foods we eat today. So starting with the simple garbage sugars, cakes, candies, pastries, pastas, all this refined crap that nobody will suggest you eat. At least we've got that down. The debate in nutrition is horrid. It doesn't cease to amaze me. Every week, a new authority comes out contradicting the other authority, the poor public. Please listen to my show 2-3 weeks ago where I put all the bigwigs arguing about meats and fats and dairy and non-dairy. Please listen to that show. Do yourself a favor because you'll find your own way. You'll find, if you persist, a way to customize your nutrition to you, your dietary choices to you. And rest assured, if you do it correctly, you'll benefit for the rest of your life. But don't listen to the experts. Do not listen to the experts. Anybody saying one size fits all needs to have their head examined. They truly do. So I'm going to be very blunt about that statement, and that's the way I'm going to be. But I'm asking you to use your common sense on this issue about how to choose your foods. Little side note. Okay. Back to the main point. How that sugar regulates in your blood. This is of critical importance. If the blood sugar in your blood, if you go in your blood and measure the concentration of glucose per volume of blood, if it gets too high, if the magic number per unit time goes over 100, you're going to start to suffer from the deleterious effects of high blood sugar. And that's where our measurements begin. Now, once that sugar does go into the blood, I want you to go down to picture number 14. Go on down to picture number 14. Glucose is also called dextrose. Boy, I forgot that. I haven't used the word dextrose in, well, prolotherapy, we talk about it. Glucose is also called dextrose or blood sugar, used directly by the cell for energy. Now, here's the point. Stored as glycogen in the muscles and the liver or converted to fat. Your glucose, when it's in the blood, does three things. It goes to the muscle for storage. It goes to the liver for storage. Or it gets converted to fat. Really important to understand that. Three really important statements there. That glucose gets converted to glycogen, stored glucose, in the liver, in the muscle, in fat. We want it in the muscle. I think we got about 600, 800 calories in the muscles. That's another fascinating show. How the muscle and the liver change in response to athletic performance. But just let me suffice to say that you're going to put some of that sugar in your muscles. Will you gain weight from doing that? No. You're going to put some sugar in your liver. Will you gain weight from doing that? No. Do bad things happen doing that? No. But as your liver and your muscles are stuffed with all the glycogen, converted glucose that they can handle, all of a sudden, now your blood sugar is going to go up because the cells can't take it in that fast. The cells of your body, not the liver, not the muscles, the rest of the body, all those cells need sugar. But after a while, they can't take it in that fast. Now you have a problem. And so to your rescue, your body secretes insulin from the pancreas. The beta cells of the pancreas secrete insulin to get the sugar out of the blood and into your cells. Now let's take a look at what that looks like in some semblance of reality here. Let's go down to picture number 10. Take a look at picture number 10. All right, picture number 10. Nice blue 3D LCD there, whatever you want to call that. Look at that. A membrane of a cell. And you see on the red in the upper right-hand side, insulin. Insulin's going to the cell ahead of time. And it's going to bind to an insulin receptor. When we say insulin resistance, which is a word I'm going to use later, we mean that that insulin is not binding too well to the receptor. We mean that the insulin knocks on the receptor and the receptor says, I don't care. I'm not home. You're not coming in. You know what your body does? It makes more insulin. And then you have 10 insulins knocking on one receptor. And then finally the receptor says, oh my God. And it opens up. So when you become insulin resistant, for reasons we're going to discuss, when you become insulin resistant, your body starts making much more insulin to convince that receptor to open up. That's bad. Bad dog. Bad situation. Bad for your health. The beginning of the end. Now, once you do bind the insulin, however long it takes or whatever it takes, then, now go over to the left of that, then the glucose receptor, the GLUT4, they don't say GLUT4 there, but the glucose receptor, number 4, opens up and takes the glucose in. And then that glucose gets converted to pyruvate, the pyruvate gets converted to acetyl-CoA, the acetyl-CoA goes into the Krebs cycle, you spit out NADH, the NADH chops over to the inner mitochondrial membrane, and it engages the electron transport chain, and out pops your ATP, which is your phosphate, your high phosphate molecule that donates energy to anything that you need done in your body, from making your eyebrows thicker, to bringing up your sex hormones, to increasing your IQ. Thus, sugar makes energy. Okay, perfect. Now that picture you got to have in your brain to understand this. Let's give you another version of that reality. Let's go to picture number 11. This doesn't say much that you haven't seen already. But picture 11. There are the insulin receptors with that blue, those blue little hexagons on top, binding to the insulin receptor so that the glucose receptor, that's the extreme right, can open up and let the glucose in. Done. There's nothing more in that picture. Nothing more in that picture. Now let's look at picture 12. It's nice to see it in different ways. When I study, I always have 5 textbooks. I had a very talented guy build a sort of platform for me around this huge swivel chair, and I have 5 textbooks in front of me, so I can just look at one and the other, because you always want to see somebody else's version of reality. Here's the 3rd version of reality. There's that green thing that says insulin binding to the receptor, and once it binds to the receptor, look to the extreme right. Finally, it gives it the number now, the GLUT4. The glucose 4 receptor opens and glucose comes in. That's very important to understand. Why? Because if you keep beating up your insulin receptors, if you keep beating them up, if you keep making them work and making them work, meaning if they have to open the door and open the door and open the door and open the door and open the door to binding insulin, because you keep eating so much cheap carbs, cheap sugar, low glycemic index, muck food, okay, garbage food, carbs, if you're in O blood, too much carbs. O bloods don't do this well. One of the great foolish debates out there, you know, McDougal, do the starch. And then we come in with Joel Fuhrman, don't do the starch, but don't eat meat. And then we've got, of course, the meat eaters, starting with Mr. Paleo and the guy before Mr. Paleo, Ogenis. And we've got this great debate. And, you know, Diadamo, with the blood type thing, well, can't mention blood type now. That's a lot of garbage. That's been proven. Look, the guy with the blood type made one contribution, if nothing else. O bloods and A bloods metabolize carbs and proteins and animal proteins differently. This is just common sense. You out there, O blood, Mr. O blood, when you don't eat your steak, you feel weak. And you know that no matter what you do on the Joel Fuhrman McDougal bandwagon, you're going to stay sick. And then we have the other type. And that type will tell you, I don't care what kind of hamburger or bison or beef or tartare or this that I ingest, I feel like it's a big blob of garbage in my stomach. And those people exist. I work with them all the time. They're very different people. They look different. They act different. They play different. They love different. They talk different. People are different. Why is that such a profound insight? Think about that. Are people different? Yes. Does it make sense that people should eat differently depending on whether they're an Eskimo or a Nicaraguan? Yes. Then why are doctors talking about one way to eat? You see? We have travesties all over the place. Here's one of them coming down the pipe. You're going to understand it more deeply and understand why I have this slight edge about this. Just a slight edge. We ought to be measuring insulin response when you're 16 years old. There isn't a single physical exam. There isn't a single lab test that I should do, that you should do, that doesn't measure insulin response. Long before, you're going to see the blood sugar high. You're going to see the insulin high. If you bombard your body, if that pancreas, right, if the cells in the Isle of Langerhans in the pancreas can bust out enough insulin, you know what? You can drink Coca-Cola all day long for the rest of your life, and you're never, ever. You can have a six-pack of Coke. Look, you know those old guys? You know those old guys back when? Those old doc guys, those guys that made it through the Depression, that felt no pain? Yeah, that's right, your grandfather. You proverbially hear about those guys. They smoked, they drank, they ate nothing but sugar all day long, and their whiskey, they lived to 95. They didn't have diabetes. I know people like that. Brooklyn, New York is filled with guys like that. Half the people in Brooklyn are like that. They're like bricks. People with very strong constitutions are born with so much reserve insulin, meaning the beta cells in their Isle of Langerhans, in the pancreas, are going to bust out that insulin like a cannon till they're 100 years old. You're never going to see their blood sugar rise. But they're going to die of high insulin. Take that one in, my friends. Take that one in deep. Just because your blood sugar doesn't rise doesn't mean your insulin's not rising. Insulin brings down blood sugar. So if you eat in a way where you're going to bring your blood sugar up, if you can pump out enough insulin, you're never going to really see the blood sugar rise. Your glycosylated hemoglobin's going to be low enough. Yes, it is. That'll be the next thing they start publishing. They'll publish it if they study it. Your glycosylated hemoglobin will still stay under 6, which will be called normal, even though your insulin's going to be way too high, and no one will ever know it because no one ever measures it. Nobody, as a matter of routine, does the 2-hour glucose. Don't listen to me. I'm just a humble nutrition guy. Listen to this guy. Go to the top of the show. Go to the top of the show today where it says click to view the full article on measuring insulin. This is a great article by Mark Hyman. He's a medical doctor, not that we care about that, but the guy's right. And he's basically saying the one test your doctor isn't doing that could save your life, and that's going to be measuring your insulin resistance, measuring your insulin. And they say glycosylated hemoglobin can measure it. No way. The 2-hour postprandial glucose tolerance test, but they have to measure insulin levels, not just blood glucose levels in that test, or you're still not going to get an understanding of what your insulin levels are. So read that article on your own when you can and take that to your doctor. Print the article and hide it in your back pocket. And when your doctor says there's no reason to do this, you pull it out and you say, but Dr. Mark Hyman is a medical doctor and he says there is, and then stick your tongue out. Okay? Just do it politely. All right? So, yeah, I'm kind of kidding, but I'm not kidding. You got to get these guys to work for you. And you got to remember, a lot of them want to work. A lot of medical doctors want to work for you, but they're tied up with the healthcare system. Now we have an even bigger problem. Okay? If you look to Europe, talk to people in England, talk to people in Canada, you know, for the standard tests in the socialized systems, they can get them all done pretty easily, and maybe that's slightly a benefit. But if you need special tests, if you need special surgeries, if you need all sorts of things, well, you can get lost in the bureaucracy, and that's the problem. I can guarantee you, knowing lots of people in England who are my clients here in the United States, that they have to pay extra. Wealthy people do very well in the socialized system of London. And people without money, I'm telling you, it's just like what happens throughout the world. It's tougher to get these tests. So you have to sway your doctors no matter what system you're in. And this one, as Dr. Hyman is pointing out, is one classic example. Now let's start putting pieces together here. Your pancreas, to lots of sugar in the blood, is pumping out insulin to bring down your blood glucose. Good. The insulin may be going too high in your blood, and that's one way you get it measured. So the point is, you're told your fasting blood glucose is normal. You're told even that your glycosylated hemoglobin, which means what? Let's just take a moment to look at glycosylated hemoglobin. Let's go to picture number 7. Glucose and hemoglobin. What would be the best place to look at the interaction between glucose and your cells? The blood. The first place the glucose is going to hit is the blood, not your brain, not your heart, not your kidney, not your pancreas, not your muscles, but your blood. So let's measure the interaction between glucose. You want to see where the action is? Sit in there in the blood and watch the number of hits your RBCs take to glucose. And that's what we call glucose plus hemoglobin is glycosylated hemoglobin. We use the HGBA1C. Your glycosylated hemoglobin measurement. Go to picture 9. There you go. HbA1c right on top there. Picture 9. HbA1c. You want to see that under 6. I believe it's 6. I don't know why they put 7 there. You want to see that number under 6. And it's a percent. Under 6% of your red blood cells should be glycosylated, meaning binding with glucose as they measure it in any given moment. And if you're up at 7, 7, 5, 8, 9, 10, 14, that is not a good sign. But here's the point. Here's the point. It's deceptive. The most direct way is to go to the amount of insulin that's being dumped into the blood. And that's what Hyman's point is in that article. That's what my point is today. All right, so you've got this insulin in the blood. Who cares? What's the problem? Isn't the problem the sugar? No, it's the insulin. In what way? Let me show you in what way. Go down all the way to picture number 18. Go to picture 18. I just want to show you. I just want you to take a look. I just want you to take a look at how insulin screws up your endocrine system, meaning your glandular system, meaning ladies, your estrogen, men, your testosterone, so on and so forth, your thyroxine. There isn't anything that insulin, high insulin, doesn't affect in an extreme way. So let's take a look at this. In men, high insulin brings down testosterone. Now, you don't see that there. You see in women, high insulin brings up testosterone. They left out the other side to that. What it's saying is that in women, if your insulin is high, it increases your testosterone. That's not good, ladies. That's how you grow a beard. And men, they didn't put it, but the high insulin will bring down your testosterone. High insulin will shrink your testicles. That's right. Literally. You see this, guys that do prednisone, steroids. The weightlifters that do steroids. Or people that for various autoimmune diseases have to do a good 6 to 12 months of constant prednisone. The prednisone will actually shrink the testicles. Why? Because prednisone raises insulin. The anti-inflammatory prednisone, like our cortisol, made by our adrenal glands, actually makes your insulin go high because it makes your blood sugar go high. So you don't have to go that far. Just look at this picture and understand this. If your insulin's up and you're a lady, the testosterone's going to go up. And if you're a man, the testosterone's going to go down. Bingo. Problem one. That's a big deal. Because what does testosterone do? The question is, what does testosterone not do? Testosterone does everything. Testosterone does everything. Now let's look at the effect of high insulin on estrogen. High insulin makes estrogen go up in men, and high insulin, I think it makes estrogen go down in women. I don't want to say that. I'm pretty sure that's incorrect. Forget that. But the high insulin definitely brings up estrogen in men. High insulin and cortisol. Now, they didn't put cortisol on here. Cortisol is the stress hormone from the adrenal gland. If cortisol goes up, so now cortisol, we're talking, if cortisol goes up, insulin goes up. If insulin goes up, cortisol goes up. Well, if insulin goes up, inflammation goes up. You see that there on that picture? Some of you may have to refresh your screen. I'm getting little notations from the team here. You may have to just press refresh to get all the pictures. You should be looking at 21 pictures. If you're not, just refresh your screen. If you're looking at picture 18, the insulin, as it goes up, because you're insulin resistant, the inflammation goes up. What does the body secrete to counter inflammation? Cortisol. High insulin, high cortisol. High insulin, you exhaust your adrenal glands. That's big. Now, suppose you have high stress. Guess what? You're also going to have high insulin. High stress interferes with insulin. High stress adds to insulin resistance. The two are in bed with each other. So now look at this. High insulin, testosterone goes up in females. It goes down in males. High insulin, estrogen goes up in males. Not good, gentlemen. High insulin, cortisol goes up. High cortisol, insulin goes up. High insulin, more inflammation, more oxidative stress. Now look at high insulin, high blood pressure. High insulin, all your sugar gets converted to fat. Now we're getting into a whole other can of worms. High insulin, all your sugar gets converted to fat. Go to picture 19 now. Now, because we've burned out your insulin receptors, your insulin resistance, which means, as I said before, you're producing more insulin. So now this insulin is high. Again, is anybody measuring this? No. That's what's so important for you to understand. No one's measuring it on you. They even do the glucose tolerance test wrong. They don't even look at the insulin on that half the time. They just look at the sugar. High insulin, insulin resistance. That picture, picture number 18. Excuse me, picture number 19. 19. Excess weight from high insulin. Why? Because high insulin sends all of your sugar to be made into fat. That's as good or as bad as it gets, depending on how you want to look at it. That's terrible for you. Cardiomyopathy, urinary frequency, lightheadedness, bloating, heartburn, constipation, erectile dysfunction, elevated blood sugar. Maybe the elevation. It's not as elevated as you think. I'll tell you one thing. You're not going to see elevated blood sugar in insulin resistance with fasting blood glucose. If you're doing what most of your doctors are doing, which is simply measuring fasting blood sugar, and you're a good strong chunk of meat, you have a strong constitution, they're never going to see high blood sugar in the morning from fasting blood glucose while your insulin is resistant and running much higher, and you're basically burning out your pancreas. They're not going to see it. But they may see the hypertension that comes from it. They may see the elevated triglycerides. Oh, but my doctor said that my diabetes, that I don't have diabetes. My fasting blood sugar result is perfectly normal, like any healthy 17-year-old. But he just can't figure out why my triglycerides are high, by my hypertension, why I can't lose weight, why I have low LDL, low HDL, and so on and so forth. Are you getting it? Yes, you're getting it. You're getting how? Don't think diabetes. Don't think high blood sugar. Look at your insulin. Okay. I'm repeating myself, but I have to. Go to picture 20. There. Now, this is the 2-hour, 3-hour blood glucose test that you can do at home on your own, except you can't measure your insulin at home. So look at this. After a 12-hour fast, you don't want to see more than 17 units per milliliter of insulin. After you eat, 30 minutes later, you don't want to see more than 120 units. 1 hour after you eat, you don't want to see more than 88. And 3 hours after you eat, you don't want to see more than 62 units of insulin. That's it right there. Those are the magic numbers. Now, they're going to vary. I don't think anyone's got these norms down right. I think they vary to constitutions. There's no end to how complex this is at a certain point. But one thing you want to be doing is not looking at glucose. You want to be looking at insulin. Very important. There it is. That's the way it looks. Now, you can get these tests ordered. You can get these tests ordered. I want you to come to the top of the page and look at Life Extension. Click to view the full article. On, there's Life Extension. You have to join them. And then they've got some deal with LabCorp. And you can order your own blood tests. And you go to the same draws that you can go if your doctor's ordering from LabCorp. LabCorp and LabQuest are the two main companies that do the blood stuff. All your MDs go through them. If you join Life Extension, you can do your own blood tests. You can order your own blood tests. I don't know why, but it's working. The public does it. There's another company also. Request a test. Click to view the full article on Request a Test. Here's another national leader in affordable direct-to-consumer lab testing called Request a Test. You go online, you order the test, you go to the blood draw center, and then they send the result to you or your healthcare provider or whoever you want. And there's the insulin blood test that you can order for yourself. These things can be done. Your doctors can do them. If you appeal to your doctors correctly, your doctors will do them for you. If you don't want to do it from the self, the point is, are you armed with the education? And that's my point. I'll be doing this for the rest of my life. I can guarantee you that. Bottom line, I want to get it to the point where people are educated and they're not looking at nutrition and their health simply like something that you just, well, don't really need to understand, just have to have a general sense of, and you take that to your healthcare practitioner. Don't do that. Understand it. Look, we do it with money. Anybody that has money, that hangs on to their money, that makes money, will tell you it's insane not to understand what you're doing with your money and simply give it to a guy named Bernie Madoff. You see? You see this all the time. You see people with money that say, I have money. I don't know anything about money, but my friend here, Charlie, he knows lots about money. And they give their money to Charlie, and Charlie puts them in the poorhouse while he buys the castle somewhere in Europe. And it happens all the time. And people who are smart about money will tell you, I know about money. Now, the guy I give my money to may know more than me, but I know enough about my money to keep that guy honest. And that's the way you have to look at health. My show, 256 shows, it doesn't make you an expert in health. But what it does do is it gives you, if you listen, enough knowledge to know how to arm yourself, because the show gets right to the point. And the point today is, from now on, henceforth, take your fasting blood glucose and flush it. And your glycosylated hemoglobin numbers and flush them. If you're over 50 years old, make sure you have your insulin resistance checked or do it yourself. And at least you'll know why. And that way, if you have resistance along the way, you can politely present an alternative view to your doctor. And again, this is not an alternative holistic view. This is just an alternative scientific view. Tons of MDs are on this insulin bandwagon. Dr. Hyman is one of them. There are many. So understand that just because your doctor, your healthcare provider, thinks this is new doesn't mean it's new. You have no idea the depth to which you have to understand this. Wait till we get to cancer. And things like chemoembolization that can shrink tumors and save lives being done at some hospitals haven't even been heard of in other hospitals. We have therapies in the United States today that save lives that are done by forerunners of these, harbingers of these new techniques that may take 20 years for some doctor at Kaiser to ever hear about. And you have to understand that in any given moment, you have to factor in the politics and the money part of our healthcare system. And in a sense, not blame your medical doctors. Your medical doctors are not to blame. It's the system right now that is particularly faltering, that is going to keep you away from the more expensive test. Do not think that a big reason you don't get your insulin measured in a two-hour glucose tolerance test, don't think it doesn't have something to do with time, energy, and money. And as Hyman's pointing out in the article, that test saves your life because it tells you you're already heading towards diabetes before your blood sugar even rises. Amen to that one. No? No? You hear me. I know you hear me. All right, back to the show. Let's go back to our picture now. So there's Dr. Hyman. Let's go. Well, is it time to discuss what we're going to do about these things? All right, let's discuss what we're going to do about them. I know I have a little bit more to say about the issue in general, but what are we going to do when we start realizing that our blood sugar is not regulating correctly? You know, it's very easy, and I always point this out, it's very, very easy to simply get on the YouTube or start reading the articles about all these wonderful herbs that bring down your blood sugar and decrease insulin resistance. I don't want to make a blanket statement. You know, you have herbs like berberine, B-E-R-B-E-R-I-N-E, berberine. Even the skeptics that study berberine, I sent away recently this, you know, very, very thick book written by a couple of medical doctors on what herbs work and what herbs don't work. What herbs stand up to the highest scientific scrutiny, like these guys are actually even capable of understanding science. But in the technical sense, to conservative science that really would like to tell you herbs don't work, what herbs do work. They went through about, 3,000 herbs, and they came up with two herbs. I mean, it was a joke. The book was like $50 to have them go through thousands of herbs to tell you none of them work and only two do. Well, okay, fine. You know what one of those herbs was? Berberine. Berberine will bring down the blood glucose. And what amazes me is when I give it to my clients, it still doesn't bring down the blood glucose. I don't know what's going on. I really don't. Chromium, berberine, ashwagandha. I mean, the list is endless about the herbs that are going to bring down blood glucose. I try them. I try them for years. I subscribe to about 15 different newsletters. I have these crackers all over the United States discovering new herbs every single day, writing them up, telling them that they're peer-reviewed, giving testimony to them, and I use them, and I don't see them work. Or I don't see them work impressively. Now, I think I've been doing this long enough with enough people to have the right to say, I think we have to keep our eye open to the thought that an herb fixes a symptom. And I think we have to keep our eyes open to that an herb facilitates a physiological system. If you want to use turmeric to cause your liver cell to make more bile, that's one thing. If you want to use turmeric, like, five different newsletters said this week is a painkiller. Are you kidding me? Turmeric is a painkiller? Okay, I know someone in the audience is going to swear by turmeric is a painkiller. But I will tell you this. 95% of the time, if you're in good pain, if you have pain from anything and you take turmeric, it isn't going to do squat. It just isn't. And I wish I was wrong. And I'm glad to be wrong. And if it sounds different to you, I'm glad for you. But statistically, I don't get it. But if you want to use turmeric to make sure that your hepatocyte makes more bile, now that is a different story. If you want to use turmeric too as an antioxidant, now that's a different story. If you want to use Chinese coin grass as an herb that makes the bile ducts more slippery, now that's a different story. Herbs, if you understand them to enhance physiological systems, are wonderful. Herbs and take this herb because your symptom's going to go away, you got to be careful with that. And there's a couple of good reasons. I won't detour too much, but I got to talk a little bit about it. Because what are you going to do? You're going to go out and you're going to start taking herbs to reduce insulin resistance, and they don't work. And berberine may work somewhat, but it doesn't work great, even when it's one of the most trusted herbs to bring down blood sugar. Or you can go try cinnamon too, right? The kasha cinnamon. You can try that one too. I wish I would see this stuff work the way everyone says it works. I just wish. But I don't. But I do know cinnamon will cool your body. It will cool it. I can tell you that cinnamon will take a bleeding or someone that's bleeding, it will thicken blood to stop. It can be used as a hemostat. So there's a subtlety about using herbs. Herbs for symptoms and herbs to fix systems. Two different things. Let me just plant that in your head so you're not disappointed when the herbs that bring down your blood sugar don't really bring it down that much. Why do I say that? Because it'll slow you up or speed you up to get to the truth. And the truth is, if you want to bring down your insulin resistance, you got to do two things. Number one, you got to drop weight. And number two, you got to move. Now, I know, right? We're back on those basics again. And why do we want to listen to a show that's just going to tell you what you already know? Because there is a depth of attachment. A depth of attachment. And when you're filling your head with how herbs are going to reduce insulin resistance, and somebody comes along and destroys that myth, you're one step closer to finally coming to terms with what you have to do when you're ready to do it to reduce your insulin resistance. And there are two things. And I see people make these mistakes all the time, so I'm going to keep talking like this. Number one, your fat is attacked by your immune system. Your fat. When your macrophages look at your fat, they start chewing on it. You don't feel them, fortunately for you. But your macrophages start taking bites out of your fat. And in that process, the macrophage produces cytokines. Cytokines, pro-inflammatory molecules, meaning they exist because of an inflammatory situation, like the bursting of a fat cell by a macrophage. These cytokines, now I want you to get this, it's worth the whole show. Here's the whole show if you can get this. I want you to go now to picture number 10. Go back to picture number 10. You see that insulin receptor about to bind the insulin? Guess what happens? If the macrophages are attacking your fat, making cytokines, the cytokine binds to the insulin receptor. The cytokine competitively inhibits insulin. The cytokine binds to the insulin receptor, so the insulin can't. And what does that mean? You're insulin resistant. So you have to make more insulin as a means of countering the fact that your fat is producing cytokines and your cytokines are binding to your insulin receptors. So there you are, Charlie, Larry, Mitch, Bert, Brent. And you guys are insulin resistant. And you're paying the price. You can't get erections because your insulin's so high. And you're 55 or 60 and you're not happy about it. And you start doing all the herbs to bring it down, and you change your diet. You change your diet to bring it down. I got to tell you something. As long as you've got the belly fat, your cytokines are competing with your process. So you're in a cycle now where it's tougher to lose weight because your insulin stays high, and unless you lose weight, you're going to stay insulin resistant. That is the ultimate catch 22. And this requires understanding so you can listen to my show again. You can listen to the show again. You can subscribe to the website. $25 for 256, 257. I don't know how many shows at this point. I have doctors studying these shows. I have people all over the world studying these shows. I do Skypes all week with people from all sorts of continents trying to go right to the point about their health rather than getting lost in the labyrinth. So let me give you a phone number if you're lost in the labyrinth and you need guidance. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. Lose weight through exercise, through dietary management, through all those ways people tell you that you can reduce your diabetes and the rest of it. Yes, do that. Go paleo. Stay away from carbs. But there's two things, and here's the point. After you even know that you're starting to become insulin resistant, here's the point. Number one, drop the weight, because if you've got the fat on, you won't get rid of your insulin resistance. And here's the one at the end. You have to get into burst training, under medical supervision if necessary. But you have to start to do burst training where your heart rate goes to a reasonable level and you sweat for 20 to 30 minutes, 2 to 3 times a week, with your heart rate up at that 130, 140, 150 range. And there's all sorts of information out there for you to expound on and facilitate. But if you don't move your body in fast bursts, just 3 times a week for 20 minutes, you don't drop weight through dietary change, you will not get rid of your insulin resistance after you identify it. And that's the key. From this point on, you identify it, and if you've got it, you reduce it or eliminate it by dropping weight and moving in that way. Not a slow trot around the park, but a supervised, medically if necessary, 3-day-a-week burst training regimen, and you will watch your insulin levels drop, and that means a lot. 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007 if you're lost in the labyrinth of health, and you probably are. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.